Spotlight here on KPFT Houston.
Rome, around 270 AD, and a kindly priest, St. Valentine, held secret marriage ceremonies for soldiers in opposition to callous King Claudius, who, believing they'd want to remain home with their wives rather than fight, had prohibited marriage for young men. Now, though the ban on marriage was a great shock for Romans, they dared not voice their protests against the mighty emperor. For disobeying the order, St. Valentine was executed on February 14th, and in his dying breath said, "Love conquers all." Okay, I made up that last line. We don't know where "love conquers all" comes from, but it had to come from somewhere, right? But it is Valentine's, and as hokey as some may find it, it's a day we celebrate the magic of love. So we acknowledge it, and we celebrate it, and for goodness sakes, we try not to forget it. And we're not going to forget it today. So welcome to Storytime on KPFT's Open Journal. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubichek, professor of communication studies at the University of Houston downtown. And today, as you might imagine, the title, "So What's Your Story?" implies that I was going to take your calls and have you share your love stories, but appropriately, lightning struck last week, so there's no call-ins. So instead, we're going to have some powerful personal reflections, searching our hearts, and of course, visits from Cupid, even if he missed his mark at times, although we might not have known it at the time. And we do have stories, don't we? I mean, we've got tales of romance and how we met our mates, memories of prom, your first kiss, what song reminds you of that special moment, the most romantic scene in a movie, most romantic song. You have crushes on Susie and Carla, Margie, Richie, Tim, your teacher. Memories stuffed in your memorabilia boxes, drawers, or at least lodged in your mind and heart. Memories frozen in time and ready to thaw today on Valentine's Day, a day for marketers, retailers, weeps, peeps, and love for keeps, we hope. It's a day that gives us a license for a variety of romantic expression and, on the most serious level, perspective. You know, the play Love Letters by A.J. Gurney was a play that was in town, as a matter of fact, last weekend. Laura and I were saying that we threw all of our love letters away. Maybe some of you have some, I don't know. But the play centers on just two characters, Melissa and Andrew. And they sit side by side at tables and read the notes, letters, and cards in which over 50 years they discuss their hopes and ambitions, dreams and disappointments that have passed between them throughout their separated lives. Not unlike the letters that you kept that documented your dreams and desires, as well as victories and defeats. So let's get obnoxiously romantic and talk about love letters. You know, they hardly exist in a digital world, and for those of you who think love letters can be written any other way other than pen to paper, think again. Love letters express love desperately. And to some, no letter, especially no response to your letter, is any love expressed. Consider Dylan Thomas to his wife Caitlin while he was on a reading tour in North America. This is March 16th, 1950. "Cat, oh my cat, if you would only write to me, my love. This is not as it seems from the address above, a dive, a joint, saloon, etc., but the honorable and dignified headquarters of the Dons of the University of Chicago. I love you. That is all I know. But all I know, too, is that I'm writing into space, the kind of dreadful, unknown space I am just going to enter. I'm going to Iowa, Illinois, Idaho, Indiana, but these, though misspelt, are on the map, and you are not. Have you forgotten me? I'm the man you used to say you loved. I used to sleep in your arms, do you remember? But you never write. You're perhaps mindless of me. I am not of you. I love you. Desperately. There isn't a moment of any hideous day when I do not say to myself, it will be all right. I'm going to go home. Caitlin loves me, and I love her. But perhaps you have forgotten. If you have forgotten or lost your affection for me, please, my cat, let me know, because I can't stand not knowing. I love you, Dylan. Well, if any of you are thinking, well, that was ambiguous, that was kind of strange, that was a little foggy, what is he talking about? The answer is, who cares? Love letters only need to make sense to the one to whom it's written, and that's the beauty of them. You know, John Adams and his wife Abigail were more than lovers. They were lifelong pen pals. The two exchanged over 1,000 letters from the beginning of their courtship to the end of his career. For centuries, love letters were the only form of communication. A couple had to stay connected and express their love to each other. Remember your long-distance relationships and the stuff that you wrote to each other? A lot of it was passionate, even desperate, wasn't it? Love letters are stories about love, or at least episodes about love, even when that love goes bad. I mean, look at King Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn. Before Anne Boleyn was Queen of England and beheaded for charges of adultery and incest, she was Henry's mistress. Yeah. Can any of you spell irony? Yeah. To whom he used to write love letters. The lesson? If your love story is a story about your breakup, be sure to leave the beheading idea at home, right? Well, you are listening to So What's Your Love Story? Times for Reflection on KPFT's Open Journal. Storytime. I'm Hank Rubicek, your host. You know, when we think about love stories and Valentine's Day, I couldn't help noticing this morning on Good Morning America, there were so many stories about surprise marriage proposals. And I thought to myself, surprise? Really? On Valentine's Day? I mean, that is about as expected as a gift on Valentine's Day. Right now, every woman in the world who thinks that Valentine's Day is important is thinking, you know, he better damn well propose today. I mean, that's about as expected, isn't it? So Valentine's Day isn't a day when only affection should be communicated and conveyed. It ought to be done other days. It's becoming a little bit ridiculous. I couldn't help thinking to myself, gee, how unexpected he proposed on Valentine's Day. Please give me a break. Okay. You know, few couples capture the essence of romance better than Robert and Elizabeth Barrett Browning. Here's an example. Robert to Elizabeth, January 10th, 1846. Do you know, when you have told me to think of you, I've been feeling ashamed of thinking of you so much, of thinking of only you, which is too much, perhaps. Shall I tell you, it seems to me, to myself, that no man was ever before to any woman what you are to me. The fullness must be in proportion, you know, to the vacancy. And only I know what was behind the long wilderness without the blossoming rose and the capacity for happiness, like a black gaping hole before this silver flooding. Is it wonderful that I should stand as in the dream and disbelieve not you, but my own fate? Was ever anyone taken suddenly from a lampless dungeon and placed upon the pinnacle of a mountain without the head turning round and the heart turning faint as mine do? And you love me more, you say. Shall I thank you or God? Both, indeed. And there's no possible return for me to either of you. I thank you as the unworthy may, and as we all thank God. How shall I ever prove what my heart is to you? How will you ever see it as I feel it? I ask myself in vain, have so much faith, my own beloved, as to use me simply for your own advantage and happiness, lest you, and to your own ends without a thought of any others. That is all I could ask you without any disquiet as to the granting of it. May God bless you. I do love you so. And, of course, Elizabeth to Robert. And now listen to me in turn. You've touched me more profoundly than I thought even you could have touched me. My heart was full when you came here today. Henceforward, I am yours for everything. Robert to Elizabeth, John to Abigail, Winston to Clementine, John Keats to Fanny Braun, Beethoven to his love, and so many others. Even Emily Dickinson, who longed for one person, her brother's wife, Susan Gilbert Dickinson, reminds us that words of love written are words saved and treasured forever by anyone to whom those words were targeted. You know, one of my personal favorite love letters is found in Andrew Carroll's War Letters, Extraordinary Correspondence from American Wars, which is a compilation of letters written by soldiers who collectively fought in battles from the Civil War to the Gulf War. You know, the fear of never again seeing your love trumps the fear of losing your life in this letter written by a Union soldier to his wife shortly before he engages the enemy at Gettysburg. My dearest wife, I fear am I not ever see you again, or our darling Sarah. The whole Reb army is waiting up the road, I'm told, and the fragrance of blood, as I write, looms largely and clearly. I long for sleep. Seeking peace in earnest is questioned by most, and words are tendered to doubt all but death. I want you, my beloved, and I fear the worst, for the worst is to feel fear without the canopy of protection over my heart. I do love you so. That kind of a story and those kind of words are things that are so precious and so private. They're so incredibly intimate. Whenever I read those sorts of letters, I think about one of my favorite romantic scenes in a film, Born on the 4th of July, where Tom Cruise, totally soaked, is running to the gymnasium where the prom is being held. Initially, he told his girlfriend that he wasn't going to be able to make the prom because he had to just pack his bags and get ready to go to Nam the next day. He was so incredibly proud of his service, and his father was so proud of him. It eclipsed everything that he felt about his girlfriend. But he changed his mind, and he ran to the gym, and he walked into the high school, and of course everybody is looking at him because he's totally drenched to the bone, and he's looking around frantically for his girlfriend and sees her standing in the middle of the gym floor dancing with someone else. He walks over her and grabs her tenderly and begins dancing with her, and Moon River is playing. And I know that sounds like a Hallmark commercial in some ways, but you know, we think about those intimate moments, moments that all of us have celebrated, that all of us have had. We save things that remind us of those moments, don't we? We break out the films like Casablanca on days like today, black and white films, old films, that remind us of things gone by, things that really did matter. And now that you born-again romantics are running around searching for that special gift, the one you failed to get until story time turned your heart into mush, Laura's going to tell you about the traffic and the weather.
I'm wiping away the tears over here to do the traffic and weather. There is a one-vehicle accident on 59 Southwest Freeway northbound at Buffalo Speedway. Two frontage road lanes are affected, and there's a stalled vehicle on West Sam Houston Tollway southbound at Memorial Drive. One ramp lane is affected. Current temperature is 55 degrees. Skies are overcast. Humidity is 96%. And today's forecast for Harris County is partly sunny with a high of 75 and a low of 63 tonight. Please stay tuned after today's Community Spotlight for the 420 Drug War News, followed by Undercurrents at 10 o'clock, and then Wide Open Spaces at 11 o'clock. Now back to story time with Dr. Hank Rubicek.
Thank you, Laura. I'm looking for Kleenex. I don't know where the boxes are. I've already gone through two boxes. Oh, my gosh. Listen, I hope you're enjoying. So what's your love story? A personal reflection on story time. A KPFT's open journal. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek at University of Houston downtown. And I got to tell you, you know, whether you want to learn to tell and listen to love stories or any and every other type of story, you have got to join us. The third Tuesday, not Thursday like it was before, of every month at the Story Swap of the Houston Storytellers Guild at our wonderful new venue, the St. Andrew's House, which is associated with St. Andrew's Church at 1819 Heights Boulevard from 7 to 8:30 p.m. This is a new venue that's just starting this month. 2 months ago, we were at Brazos Bookstore, but all the book signings and stuff made it really difficult for us to maintain that venue. We thank them so much for years of patronage and support. But we're now at St. Andrew's House at St. Andrew's Church at 1819 Heights Boulevard. You want to park behind the house or on the boulevard, and we'll be waiting for you. I'm the proud president of the Houston Storytellers Guild, and you want to be sure to check out our site at www.houstonstorytellers.org. Again, that's www.houstonstorytellers.org. You know, I have my own love story. We all do, of course, but I have to tell you, I'm getting married April 15th and to Peggy, the only woman I feel I ever really loved. I'm waiting for all the ahs. I don't hear any, but I assume some of you are saying it out there. That's what I'm looking for. But, you know, curiously, my mother told me the day before Peggy wanted to buy me a ring that she had my grandfather's wedding band. Now, for those of you who've listened to this show just even a few times, know that my grandfather meant everything to me. He really was my hero. He was a man that was in Dachau concentration camp for 3 years. He never said a bad word about anyone, despite all of the atrocities that he saw each and every day. He was that fabulous of a man. So the word grandfather to me means so very much. But since I've been married before, I asked my mother the reason she never mentioned the ring before as the ring I might want to wear. Well, it turns out she never felt the emotional urge to give me that wedding band. She claims to have forgotten to tell me about it. And then she told me a real quick story behind the wedding band itself. The story is that after the war, when my grandparents were separated, my grandmother, who was in Sudhof concentration camp, went looking for my grandfather. Well, she went back to the small village outside of Germany to look for him, and in her search saw one of her neighbors. Her neighbors recognized her immediately and asked her how she was and told her how happy she was to see her. When my grandmother asked her about her husband, the woman told her that her husband was killed. And when she asked my grandmother, "Are you having any luck finding your husband, my grandfather?" my grandmother said, "Not yet." Well, it turns out that woman looked at my grandmother and said, "You are a woman of hope. You've always given me hope ever since I've known you, and your eyes twinkle of hope. And you're going to find your husband. So I'm going to give you my wedding band and my husband's wedding band. And I'm going to give this to you as a symbol of hope." So she took the wedding bands because she didn't have hers anymore. My grandfather didn't have his. Everything was taken away from them. 2 days later, she found my grandfather and placed that wedding band on his finger. That's the wedding band that I'll be using at my marriage. And it means that much to me. I hope you're having a good time on Open Journal's Story Time on KPFT. You know, I know we sometimes make too big of a deal out of Valentine's Day, that somehow the sentiments we share with another is dampened by the requirement that we say something loving today. But I am reminded of the power of constant love, that those sentiments, genuine and rich, that have to be conveyed daily to the ones we love. 20-some years ago, a colleague of mine who teaches at another university in another city called me to tell me about the death of her husband, Bob. I knew Bob fairly well, but I knew his wife, Julie, even better. She and I had gone to graduate school together. We were good friends. She told me that every day Bob would ask her to dance with him in their kitchen, oftentimes when Julie was preparing a meal. Sometimes Bob would grab her and say, "Come, dance with me." And he would grab her and start dancing slow, and she'd push him aside humorously. And she would tell Bob, "I'm busy right now. Come on, leave me alone," and shoo him away. Well, Julie told me this would go on for years. And with relentless pursuit, Bob would ask her to dance with him in their kitchen. And one night, they were cooking together, as Julie tells me, and Bob asked her, as usual, to dance with him. And as usual, Julie replied, "Not now." Bob said he wasn't feeling well. He went to take a nap, but when Julie went to awaken him less than an hour later, he was dead. He had a massive coronary. When she called me to tell me that Bob had passed, she revealed tearfully, "If Bob were here and asked me to dance with him, I would drop everything in the kitchen. I'd let it all burn, all of it. And I'd dance with him until he wanted to stop." That story always does something to me. I think about that a lot because I think about how we take things for granted so very much. And sometimes one of the messages that we should get from Valentine's Day, that we genuinely should get from Valentine's Day, is that we really can't take love for granted. We can't do it. And I'm not talking about love only with our mates. We're not talking about simply intimate love. We're talking about the love and respect that we show our children, our parents. It's a good idea to call your mother on Valentine's Day, isn't it? It's a good idea to tell people that you care, that you've always cared for, that Valentine's Day is a remind you to say that to others. When I think about Valentine's Day, I think about stories that, frankly, I've never thought about before, or at least haven't thought about recently. I think about the watch that my grandfather gave me. He used to tell me the story growing up about a watch that he had while he was in Dachau. It was a watch that he kept in his sock because he had to hide it so the Nazis wouldn't take it away. The story was is that every time he knew the watch was in his sock, he had hope that one day he would run across my mother and my grandmother again. Well, he told me this story every year. And as a child, I was somewhat bored by it, to tell you the truth, but I listened to him because I loved him. I didn't even know he had this, didn't even know he had the watch. But at his funeral, a very cold day in April, I remember, a very good friend of the family came up to me with a small box, cotton laced. And in that box was that gold watch. And under the watch, small piece of scratch paper that read, "I love you." That was him. That was typical him. He was a man of very few words, but every word meant something. Is that a Valentine's story? Well, I'm thinking about it today, so it's got to be a Valentine's story. It's a day that prompted that thought, and it's a day that, frankly, should prompt so many thoughts for so many of us. Sometimes we minimize this day by having our children give everyone a Valentine's card in school. Even the kids they don't know or don't like. We sometimes buy gifts thoughtlessly, thinking it's the thought that counts. Well, I got to tell you, that's a cliche that really isn't born of truths. Gifts can be thoughtless if they don't show the other that the gift is a product of us paying attention to them. A gift that reflects meaning and the generosity of time spent retrieving it. Anything else is a mere present, a gesture that comes from obligation rather than celebration. So today, what I want all of you to do is to love each other and tell each other how much you love each other. And remember, it is never too late to live happily ever after. And I want all of you to get back here on February 24th because we're going to be listening to some terrific folk tales by David Goodrow, who'll be singing them to you. That'll be unusual. And I'm Dr. Hank Rubicek, and I want to wish all of you a very happy, healthy, and fun Valentine's Day. Not just today, but every day. Tell that person that you love her. Peggy, I love you. All of you better do that, too, because I don't want to have to sound like the only fool in town. Take care. Have a great day.
You have been listening to Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. Since 1970, KPFT has been a unique source on the Houston airwaves. Visit KPFT.org to support this station. KPFT listener members are welcome to produce an Open Journal. Prospective producers must fill out an Open Journal request form, which is available at our website. The program director welcomes your feedback on every Open Journal. Listener feedback helps KPFT determine what Open Journals are appreciated by the community at large. To get in touch with the program director, send an email to pd@kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 308. Please stay tuned for Undercurrents coming up at 10, followed by Wide Open Spaces at 11. And thank you for tuning in today to Open Journal here on 90.1 KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace. Thank you.